Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Writers Co-op.
We are your co-hosts.
I'm Jenny.
And I'm Udan. So before we get into it today, I wanted to let you know that our episode today is sponsored by Outvoice, which has a focus that we can get behind. So too often, freelancers are spending months, years, tracking down overdue, unpaid invoices. Outvoice fixes that. It's the only freelance management system built for publishing by freelancers. How does this work? Outvoice empowers publishers by using automation and CMS integration to improve freelance management and invoicing so contributors are paid instantly. Let me repeat that. It's not a typo. Instantly, with the same click of a button that publishes their work. No need to generate an invoice, and this saves everyone time and money. So publishers love Outvoice as much as freelancers. So right now, InStyle, Foreign Policy, FanBite, ClickHole, Adweek have all moved onto the system, and Outvoice is working with some of the biggest publishing companies as well. So the next time you see someone struggling with a broken invoicing system, or the next time your client pays you late, tell them to visit outvoice.com and leave all their headaches in the past. So if you're interested in joining them on their mission to fix this consistent industry-wide issue about payment for good, follow them on Twitter at @outvoicepay.
I have to say we're pretty picky about who we let sponsor our episodes on the Writers Co-op, but Outvoice was a definite no-brainer. They are making the freelance world a better place. And as everybody knows, we are pushy and very much believe that freelancers should be paid on time. So you should definitely check them out and join their movement. So what's up, Udan?
So, you know, it's the end of the year, sprinting. Just wrapped up a draft of a story I've almost spent 6 years on. So, you know, their feelings. I'm tired. I'm proud of having, you know, stuck with it without going broke. And just generally a lot of anxiety around the story. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah, 6 years. That's so wild. It's a huge undertaking. And I can't wait to read the story. I feel like I've heard a lot about it for the past few years that we've known each other.
Yeah. So that's me, Jenny. What about you?
Yeah. Want to hear about a failed experiment?
Yeah.
Okay. So, as you know, I opened up my coaching schedule in October. Like, I just, like, blew the doors wide open. And tons of people enthusiastically arrived and scheduled themselves for sessions. It was fantastic. It was also way too much. Like, some days I would literally have 5 or 6 coaching calls. So I guess I shouldn't say that this was a failed experiment because it was just an experiment, but it showed me that things about the schedule don't work for me and that there are things that also do work for me, but it gave me a lot of good information.
Oh my God. First of all, I'm excited to our listeners. We are going to have an episode about overbooking ourselves, but also Jenny, tell us, what are you going to do about this?
Yeah, I like need this episode on overbooking for myself. What happened is I hired a coach to help me streamline things. It was a very lucrative month for me, but the reality is that the pace of it is just not sustainable. So I have realized I just can't take everyone in a one-to-one coaching format long-term. Like, I just am going to need to refine that strategy. My coach is always talking about a one-to-one strategy or a one-to-many strategy. And so I'm trying to shift my business model to a one-to-many strategy. What does that mean? It means fewer video calls, God bless, and more group coaching. And I'm also exploring options like a newsletter or an ebook or places where people can get insight from me without me needing to speak to them one-on-one on a call. The reality is that I am not in a hustle season in my life as much as maybe my brain would like me to be. Like, my reality is not that. I have a small child. He keeps getting sick. I need flexibility. My husband doesn't have flexibility in his job. So I actually really do need to focus on work that's more flexible. So the long and short of this is that I am actually going to add back in some more writing work and not eliminate my coaching offerings in 2022, but definitely sort of refine them and shrink them down.
This is interesting, though, because you went out there, set up this experiment, opened up the opportunity, and then things happened and you learned. All of this reminds me to of all the reasons that I got a coach, because sometimes we need help leveling up and seeing our options.
Yeah, exactly. I felt like I had like all the puzzle pieces in front of me on a table, but I needed someone to suggest different ways to organize them. Like, I am only one brain, right? So I think coaching is oftentimes about refinement and brainstorming and getting more ideas. And that is what I'm doing. So by the time this episode is on the airwaves. I will also be in the midst of that refinement and then preparing for a few weeks off during the holidays, which I think will also help because I get a lot of good ideas when I'm not working.
Woo, more time off. More time off.
More time off. That's okay. Yes, we just have an episode where we yell about that. We kind of do. In the first season, we kind of have one about vacation. But onto the show this week. Let's dig in.
Yeah, Jenny, what are we talking about?
Today, we're going to talk about plateauing. And I know this was actually your idea, Wudan. I guess we could also call it holding in place or not making big changes to your business.
Yeah, this might come as a shock to some of our listeners since we literally just spent episodes discussing ways to level up, whether it's to earn more money, develop skills or services, negotiate more, earn six figures, whatever.
Yeah, but it's worth saying that growth, I think, gets framed in the freelance world as like a constant and required thing.
Yes, there's always something next, whether it's upping your rates, pitching another story, figuring out another arm of your business.
Yeah. And I think what we don't talk about often is achieving a steady pace. And so that's what today's episode is going to be about, which I'm really stoked to dig into.
Yeah. For some reason, we don't talk about this because, you know, the hustle, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit countercultural, right? To say, oh, I actually like my business how it is. I'm going to hold in place. So, Wudan, like I said, this episode is your idea. So do you want to share a little bit about what inspired it?
Yeah. So I've spoken about this publicly, but since day one of the pandemic and the world shutting down, also my world shutting down, I've been recovering from burnout. So when my work that involved travel dried up for the first few weeks, my brain went very quickly into scarcity mode and I overworked myself covering COVID. And there was so much work with COVID and I kept doing it because I felt like it was my obligation that people got good news. And there's so much about ego and morals and journalism wrapped up in that to unpack, and identity as well. But anyway, that's how I justified to myself that I couldn't stop working and I quickly burnt out. So in June of 2020, my husband was basically telling me that he wasn't having fun with me because I was so exhausted from work. I could hardly have a conversation after we both put away our computers. So I hired a therapist with the goal of bringing me back from the burnout ledge. I had so much work to do on breaking the cycle. And I've talked a lot about that online, the steps that I took. So part of it was taking more time off, giving myself permission to be off, like not at my computer. And another part was detaching myself from my identity, that being a journalist wasn't just what I did. It also was who I was. So the TLDR is that I've spent a lot of time unpacking my burnout, getting out of it for the last year and a half, and getting my business to a stable place where I'm just earning the money that I want, taking the time off, working on things here and there that I still care about. So I was basically looking for a place of sustainability. And in doing that, I found a little plateau. So more recently, my therapist introduced the idea of neutrality to me, which was revolutionary. And it means that I'm not bored or necessarily complacent about my work, and I'm also not actively moving forward either. So the way that I visualize this is like being on a floaty, bobbing in a lake during the summer. You're just maintaining balance and like enjoying it. And of course, I'm probably sipping a margarita. So honestly, neutrality is a super freaking weird place for me to be because I've never been there before. So this past March, I stopped writing COVID studies. I put it on Twitter to basically like, if you're an editor, never come with me with a COVID story. Full stop. It was too much for me to keep up with the news cycle, it turns out. And I just started working on longer term things.
Yeah. You know, I remember during our business retreat last year, you were right in the midst of dealing with this. And I remember we were hiking up the hill to Lava Butte in Oregon. And we were talking about, is it possible to not be achieving something aggressively? Because this is really counterintuitive for both of us, I think. And then if yes, like if you're not achieving something aggressively, how would you measure success around that? I know it is a big issue that both of us grapple with and a lot of other people do too. And I think you're right that it has a lot to do with decoupling your identity from work and also asking, what is the long game here? Like not being in such a rush to get there, I think.
Agreed. And LOL at the irony of talking about the next thing and maybe also aggressively hiking up a hill. Aggressively.
Yeah. I know. Anne Friedman also talks about wanting to build a business that would last for 20 years, not two. And I like this idea, right? She's not always focused on hustling or an ambitious grind. It's about a sustainable pace. And what I'm hearing you say, Wudan, is that you grew your business by changing your pace from sprint to longer term projects. Like, counterintuitively, your growth involved slowing down.
Yes, that's correct. So, Jenny, tell me about how you think about your business and sustainability.
Yeah, it's interesting that we're recording this episode right now because I think I go back and forth between seasons of hustle, which I would call very like outward approval, industry standard growth, and seasons of creative growth, which are much more inward. So right now I'm coming off a month of hustle, like I said, that honestly felt very bad in my body because I was craving more inner focus and a slower pace, but I was tied to this faster pace that I had put into play in October. So for me, especially because I'm raising a young child, I'm very conscious of my energy and it being finite on any given day. And I often think about how the biggest growth moments for me in my business and in my life aren't actually about stepping forward and pushing. Usually for me, the hardest thing to do is step back and settle in and settle down. Like, even the word settle is like a little gross to me. So finding a sustainable pace and then sitting in it for a while without making changes, that's hard for me. It's really hard. To be honest, last spring and summer were like that. I don't feel like I was striving. I was making enough, not an ambitious amount. I liked the work I was doing. I wasn't like obsessed with it, but I didn't hate it. And I just had a lot of time to play. Like, I would sit in the hammock in the backyard and I would go hiking and I would explore and I was doing creative things. And that time period, I think back on it a lot because it felt really good. And I would say that was sustainable.
Yeah, I like what you said about growth for you looking like staying in one place versus sprinting and changing everything all the time. And increasingly, I think that's true for me too. So what we're really both saying is that getting to a plateau in your business is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, and I think this is really counterintuitive. I think it's because it's maybe anti-corporate, like, which is almost like anti-American, right? As a freelancer, the culture is telling you hustle. Like, I think this plays into last episode's six-figure conversation big time. There's a lot of pressure to go, 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 make the money, achieve the things. And I will say I am working with a coaching client right now who has achieved incomparable freelance writing success in a very short period of time. And yet she is so freaking tired. Like, she is exhausted. She doesn't have time for anything she loves. The other day she was like, I just want to take a shower, when I asked her what she needed time for. So our goal in working together has really been, let's swap out your clients, slow you down a bit so you have fewer clients, you're making a little more, but also find a pace that you could sustainably run at. It's like a long game pace, because what she's doing now is just not, it's not that. It's not that. It can't last.
Honestly, there are days where I need a shower too, because I just haven't had time.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's real. It's so real.
So we're just here to give you permission that you can stop growing in your business for a second. In fact, it's really freaking exhausting to be always in growth mode. And if you're in a good place, what we're saying is two things. One, get some awareness around why a certain pace of work is working for you. And then two, enjoy it. Stay there for a while. And it may be a little uncomfortable at first, but honestly, isn't everything? And not to mention, you can be in neutrality with some aspects of your life, like work, and growing in other parts of your life, like in your partnership, friendships, hobbies, and other skills. It's okay to coast.
Yeah, I love that. I'm like imagining coasting down a hill when you've done all the work to like bike up it, right? Like, that's so pleasant. And there are definitely seasons to every element in your life. Like, sometimes your work is blooming because you're inspired and you want to spend a ton of energy in that direction. You want to grow. And then other times, I think life pulls you in another way where you want to hibernate. You want to just kind of chill for a little bit. I think having the flexibility to see that and be where you are and chill out if you need to is really one of the most important skills we can grow as freelance business owners.
Agreed. So with this frame in mind, this anti-hustle forever mindset, if you will, I would love to talk about what makes a business sustainable. Jenny, what do you think?
Yeah, so a big aspect for me, the first one that comes to mind, probably because we both love this aspect, is taking time off.
Yeah, plus 100 billion thousand.
Yeah, we've said it so many times, but I think time off is really recharging. Like, it's impossible to power through work forever week on week, you know, especially if you're working weekends. And I think for me, time off is what allows me to feel free and flexible. It's like a big reason why I work for myself, and it does give me perspective on my business.
For sure. I agree. So how do you think about taking vacation?
Yeah, for me, and I think for you too, vacation is baked into my business strategy up front. So this year I will have taken 12 weeks of vacation, maybe more, but that's 3 months off basically, right? And I'm working like 25 hours a week. So my monthly income goals reflect that. And what I'm doing is basing what I want to make for the year on those 9 working months, not the 12 full months. So it adjusts my monthly income goals a little bit. And then when I take time off, I don't feel guilty about it. Like, I already have money in the bank to pad that. I have talked about this on Twitter, but I am also just very super communicative about my time off. So my clients expect it. They aren't surprised. In fact, I think usually they're like very jealous. I block the time on my calendar so that I myself cannot like rob myself of vacation. You know, I can't take an assignment that would fall into those windows. So yeah, I would say I'm like fiercely protective of my time off because it matters to me so much. And sometimes when I'm feeling fried, I will step in and actually put a bunch of days proactively on my calendar midweek. Think like, you know, a random Wednesday. And I think those days are actually necessary for reflection as well, especially if I'm really burnt out. I'm just really super aware of keeping those boundaries in place and not moving them because they serve me. What about you, Dan? How do you think about your vacation?
Oh, man. So my therapist, burnout coach, said that basically everything great that we want to enjoy, we're socialized, is bad and that we should feel guilty. Vacation, sex, food, the list goes on. So generally speaking, my concept of how much time I need off has changed every year. And frankly, I've been bad at updating my business plan to account for it. But somehow the math still seems to work out. I'm going to have to revisit it for this coming year, but in short, I work a 4-day week. I'm not working more than 30 hours. And one of those work days, I am not on any calls. I need about 5 days off every month. And I want to be taking at least 1 week off every quarter. So this year I took about 6 weeks off during the summer with a continual 3.5 week chunk. And then in the winter, I will also take a month off, and I've taken other sporadic weeks off throughout the course of the year. I don't know what it maths out to. It's more, like, honestly, it's more than 3 months of vacation a year. So like you, Jenny, I'm really trying to make my income in 9 months, if not less, which is always a fun puzzle.
Yeah, I think there's occasionally chatter about how freelancers don't take vacation because we always have to work. But it's like, you can plan your business for this, right? You can plan for these vacation needs. You don't have to start with 3 months. You can start with like 3 weeks, but it's still something you can build in. So the question to me is really like, are we going to live to work or are we going to work to live?
Yeah, the answer feels obvious to me at this point.
Yeah, I agree with you. So Dan, tell me how else you think about sustainability in your business.
So very early on, I think season one of this podcast, when we talked about finding work, I introduced the concept of rotating stability, which is having a bunch of clients who I already have established rapport with, who I can call on if I need to fill in something in my work schedule. So I think this is how I ended up with like 30 some clients last year. But good news, I did some reckoning moving into 2021 and let some of those clients go slowly. So every so often when I need to fill gaps in income, I reach out to some of those clients the month before asking if they have anything they want my help on. Again, nobody knows when I'm available all the time. It's impossible to keep track of. You got to ask for what you want. So that's how I think about, you know, managing my clients to make sure I still have work and money coming in. So Jenny, you do something similar. What do you like to say in those reach out emails?
Yeah. So even though I'm doing more coaching now, I still have, I would say 4 or 5 rotating stable writing clients who will bring work to me or who I check in with. This is really key for that coasting mentality, because if you're trying to restart your client list from scratch every month, like, I don't think coasting is super possible. So every month isn't a clear slate for me, is what I'm saying. It's less of a lift to find work. I already know that, you know, I guess we're our own anchor client now with the Writers Co-op, but I already know there's about $4,000 a month of income that I can count on, that's predictable. And I'll see a clear spot in my calendar. Usually I look about 6 weeks ahead. So if I see an empty spot, I'll like reach out to one of those clients who I remind, and I just say via email, hey, I hope you're doing well. I loved working together on the previous X assignment. I'm looking at December. I'm looking at January. I have a space that I could help with a project. Is there anything that you need?
How does that turn out?
Yeah, I think usually it's pretty good. Like sometimes they'll have something immediately. Although I'll say sometimes they don't. They might book me out for something like 3 months down the line. But either way, it pads my calendar. And I think even if they don't have something available that moment, it at least jogs their memory of who I am. And I'll say I've been working with these clients for a couple of years. So I think it's not like I have to prove myself. They're like, oh yeah, Jenny would be great for this. So I would say even if they don't have something for me right away, oftentimes I'll get an email a couple of weeks later offering me an assignment. And I think like just speaking to that sustainability aspect, it adds an element of predictability. It's like the opposite of hustle that is really soothing to my business overall.
Yes. And I think having this rotation for me has to do with the fact that it's rare for your clients to always have work for you. Again, seasons. One of my institutional writing clients only has work for me in about like the first half to three quarters of the year. So it's something I mentally account for when I think about reaching out to them.
Yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense.
And I think along with this, sustainability for me is having, you know, one client giving you regular work too. So I do quite a bit of fact checking for one podcast production network. And when I'm booked for fact checking a season, I basically have a steady stream of money that's coming in over a couple of months. And it benefits me because that also becomes money I no longer have to hustle for.
Yeah, that's a great relationship to have. I think it's like, you know, it's a client who continues to give you work where there's basically no mental lift for you. And finding that work, it's a true anchor client. And like I said, I think this podcast in the same way has also become our anchor client with that predictable, reliable, patterned energy.
Yeah, it's definitely turned into that. Jenny, what else does sustainability look like for you?
So there's also an element for me of not having a business that causes me emotional unrest or drama. So basically no asshole clients. You know, I want to love the people I'm working with and find value in the work and in the relationship.
Yes, 100%. I'm screaming.
It's just too much emotional energy, I think, to work with clients, at least for me, who are micromanaging, who are going to pay me late, who lose my invoices, who give me mean edits. Like the whole thing, I think I've like reached a point in my career where I just am no bullshit about this. Like I'm very picky about who my clients are because I've learned that I really value my peace most of all, and having people around me who constantly put me on an emotional roller coaster is not something I can maintain. It bleeds into my life. The cost is like, yeah, way too high for me.
Oh my God, I cannot agree more.
Yeah, I know you're the same way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Jenny, what tips do you have on avoiding bad clients?
Honestly, I think for me, this comes down to my intuition. I can tell pretty fast if someone isn't going to be a good fit because I have clear boundaries. They overstep them. Bye. You know, I think that there are other ways to suss this out though. Like my intuition is pretty chiseled at this point, so it kicks in pretty fast. But you can also talk to your colleagues. If someone else has worked for a client, I will usually ask them about their experience. I think this happens a lot in the Writers Co-op Slack channel. Just like, what was it like to work with them? How would you rate them? What was difficult? That information can be really good to have when you're onboarding someone new.
Yeah, I think one really clear, obvious thing to me is if I have my work hours and my email signature, which I do, and somebody is suggesting a call outside of those working hours, yeah, where's the red flag emoji when you need it? But I'm, you know, a fan of small tests like that. And yeah, plus one to TWC Slack, the freelancer's grapevine is a pretty interesting place to be.
Yeah, I also recently wrote up a rule book for my business. Like, this is what I stand for. This is what's cool with me. This is what's not cool with me. Some of my clients will do this. They'll call it like their effort lists, or I have people who've like decorated an actual book. So, you know, it's just nice to sometimes have those rules handy to measure up against. If a client is pushing those boundaries, like I said, like trying to get me to do 5 revisions or sending mean edits or trying to call me or something or like text me, you know, all these things, I am just not into that. That's a no, right? Are they trying to schedule calls with me like in random evenings? Are they pinging me on edits when I've told them I'm taking a day off? All of that is just not a fit for me in terms of my sustainable long game business. And it's not just about the emotions. It also costs me time, which costs me money. So that is a big thing for me. That's on the no list.
Yeah, I don't take calls on Fridays. Anyone who tries to push for a call on Friday is automatically on my red list. And I'm also really wary of clients who are like, oh my God, we are paying you so much. No, that's gaslighting. And of course, there are industry rates and all that. And at the same time, I am defining my own rates based on my business and life needs. I'm not sticking with industry standards. A lot of the time, that doesn't work for me.
Yep, I totally agree. So is there anything else you look for in terms of red flag clients, Wudan?
I am quick to fire clients who don't trust me, clients who change their vision of things during the course of a project, clients who give me feedback that make me feel like shit. When I think about sustainability, I think about, like you said, Jenny, expending as little emotional energy as possible. And again, I'm not saying that work shouldn't be work, but emotional labor absolutely feels like the most taxing form of work for me.
Yep, exactly. So I feel like we should talk about this question. How do you fire a client?
I mean, I think it's okay to disappear into the ethers. I have absolutely done that. I've also told clients my business priorities have changed and I won't have capacity to help with this starting in, say, quarter three. Let me know if I can help wrap anything up by then or refer people to you or something to that effect.
Yeah, that's usually my line. Like, my availability is now limited and this isn't a great fit for me anymore. Or, you know, nothing super long-winded or emotional. Occasionally, if a client was a good fit and then they become less of a good fit, I will also let those clients go. So I think that's also important to say that, like, as your needs change, what allows for a sustainable business for you might also change in terms of who your clients are.
Yeah, I agree. So what else, Jenny? Anything else?
Yeah, the last thing that comes to mind for me is that a sustainable business is one that aligns with my values. And I know we've talked about this in past episodes, like in the very first episode, I think this is what we talk about. But to me, values alignment is super key. So if I value freedom and I'm in a business where I feel trapped, that is not a sustainable long game for me at all.
Yeah, this is, I think, one of our first modules of even our business planning course, which we'll link to in the show notes, which may feel counterintuitive because business planning seems like revenue goals and all that stuff. But if you haven't ever done work to identify your values, which is, you know, in shorthand of what you care about, it could be really helpful to figure out what that means for a business that works for you over the long term.
Yeah, this is so important to me. I think, too, that there's something in here about decoupling your identity from your work. That's the last thing I want to say. So, like, I can't say that I have managed to do this, but it's something I'm working on in therapy and with my coaches. So, Wudan, I know you have been deep in this topic, both reporting and personally. So, how do you think about this? I've noticed that you've started to say that you do journalism instead of being a journalist. So tell me about that.
Yeah, I'm ming and laughing over here because I just filed a story about this. I'll post it on the Bird app, the internet, once it's up. But the working title is, in short, journalism isn't who you are, it's what you do. So the idea is that we are human beings living in this big, big world who are doing things. This is not an Outdoor Voices ad. We're just doing things. We're playing. We're exploring. We are creating. What is the verb that you would use to describe what it is that you're fundamentally doing? I started paying attention to that a lot more. So last winter, in the depths of the pandemic, I was on this group event and the host introduced somebody else as a journalist and this woman corrected him and was like, well, sort of, but really I commit acts of journalism. And I was like, whoa. So in the beginning of this episode, I talked about, you know, how my commitment to the truth was so tied into why I kept saying yes to work in early COVID days. And that commitment is in line with the principles of journalism, but it's also, I learned, a principle by which I live my life.
This is so interesting. How do you think this identity thing helps with sustainability in your business?
Well, I can separate the two suddenly. Like, I am not my work and my work is not me. And that really helps set up boundaries. So Again, what I do for work isn't all-encompassing, and I'm not dropping everything to do something because the public needs whatever information I think they need. Time constraints, boundaries. I don't work 9 to 5, more like 8:30 to 3 with a bunch of built-in breaks because my dog is active. There's regularity and routine and predictability in my schedule. I started saying no to certain types of work that very clearly burn me out, such as fast turnaround, stringing. I started saying yes to things that have a longer burn, which ironically stopped burning me out.
I agree with you. I think, you know, when my business defines me, when it is like the key defining factor of my life, then every up and down feels more personal. I'm at risk. There's more at stake. But if it is just something that I do and I have a full life beyond my work and I believe I'm contributing in a lot of ways, then my business is just one piece of the puzzle. Like, yeah, there's just less at stake. And it feels like I can't play a sustainable long game, to be honest, without that piece. Like, I can't live in panic for like 10 years while running a business if I feel every day like I'm at risk, right? So I'm really just building a business that helps to support my life is the honest truth. I like to work, I do, but I also like a lot of other things that are not work. So yeah, Wudian, any other sustainability thoughts before we finish out this episode?
I mean, I think the last one is about money.
Yes, you know I love the money talk. What do you mean?
I love it. Yeah, I mean, you know, thinking about how much money you need for your life, right? And at what level of freelance earnings does that make you feel like your life is sustainable?
Yeah, this is a really good question. We talked about this a little bit in the six figures episode, but when I started, I was aiming for like $6,000 to $8,000 a month. And then I would consistently hit $10,000 to $12,000 a month. And then I had a newborn, I was back to six. And now I'm looking at sort of like $6,000 to $8,000 as a reasonable goal again for me. And I think it's because when I'm making about $8,000 a month, I don't feel over busy, but I feel like I'm making a difference. I feel like my days are full and things are interesting. So when I look at it quarterly now, instead of judging on a monthly basis too, it actually feels more holistic to me. And then like we've talked about in past episodes, that number, that financial number is on a list of questions for me also with a lot of other things in my life. So when I get to the end of the month, the question is, did I make enough? But also, did I take care of myself? Did I go outside? It's a whole picture look at what the money does for me. So basically, I think what I'm saying is like what I need to make changes based on the season that I'm in and what my husband is doing for work and where we live. So I guess for me, the number that I map out to in terms of a sustainable life and what I sustainably want to bring in, it's somewhere between $75,000 and $100,000, depending on the year. And this allows me to take vacations, save a lot into my retirement accounts, which is a big goal of mine right now, work towards buying a house, and, you know, funding the basics of our lives, like rent and food too. And it's taken me a few years to land on kind of what would be sustainable for me too. So what about you, Wudian? What feels sustainable for you?
Yeah, so I have basically figured out that low six figures is the minimum I'd want to earn in order to max out my Roth and contribute, you know, another 10,000, if not more, to my general investments. Contrary to the person I thought I was, I actually want to retire. I also live in a really expensive city and I have expensive hobbies, admittedly. Yarn is expensive. Gear for climbing is expensive. So, you know, another part of my sustainability is constantly patrolling the perimeter of my boundaries and checking with clients and making sure that they are paying me enough.
Yes, I think it's okay to be expensive. I think the more expensive I am, honestly, the better my work turns out to be.
Yes. And again, if you're looking to level up in terms of income, check out our previous episode on the six-figure freelancer and leveling up on how to identify clients so you can pay what you deserve.
Yep, I love it.
All right. So to recap, freelance businesses are not about constant growth. It's really, really, really okay to not constantly grow. You can build your business to a place you're proud of and just enjoy it.
Yeah, we talked about a number of ways today too to make your freelance business sustainable if it doesn't feel that way already. So essentially the goal is to get you to that place where you can just coast for a little bit. So some of those ideas are building in substantial vacation days, time for rest, finding a stable of good clients who don't make you want to blow your brains out, who you don't have to fire, decoupling your identity from work, keeping your values in mind so that what you're doing aligns with what you care about, and making enough money to sustain your life both now and in the years ahead when you want to retire.
We would love to hear from you on how you've thought about sustainability in your business. What's your long game?
You can tweet us at @TWC_pod. We will also continue this conversation in our Slack channel, which you can join if you're not a Patreon member. Now you can join us at any time, or you can write us an email at thewriterscoop2@gmail.com. And don't forget, today's episode was sponsored by Outvoice. You can join the movement to push for net now payment for all freelancers, hell yes, by following them on Twitter at @OutvoicePay.
So finally, if you enjoy our show, remember to rate and review it. It helps us be more visible.
Hooray. Okay, Wudian, I am out of here.
Same, Jenny. Talk to you next time.
Bye.
Season 4 of The Writers Co-op is made possible by you, our listeners. The Writers Co-op is co-hosted and written by me, Wudian Yan, and Jenny Gritters. Our producer is Jen Monier, and our editor is Susan Vallett.